Into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
And get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Now, very happy to say we have Andy Dunn with us. It has been too long. Andy Dunn, I'm not going to reveal all, not going to reveal fully how the sausage has been made, but we've done this briefly once already. We're just going to go from the top again. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, thanks, Joe.
In our very brief conversation a few moments ago, I was asking you how things are, and you said all good, thankfully, as things can go in lockdown three. Aside maybe from dodgy Wi-Fi.
Yes, a little bit of dodgy Wi-Fi. Believe it or not, I've actually got former Leinster prop Peter Coyle en route to our clinic, who's a bit of an IT guru, who's actually hoping to fix it for us in work here. So we're getting there.
Good man. Well, listen, interesting point in the season, calm before the storm, really. So Munster-Leinster this Saturday, and then Six Nations is 2 weeks away. So we don't have any games from the weekend to discuss. And therefore, a few interesting points I want to put to you about Irish rugby generally. And you've picked out one or two things that we're going to talk about. But I might start briefly with Munster-Leinster on Saturday. This is probably as close as we get now, we being the audience, to a good old-fashioned trial match, in effect. You know, Munster-Leinster, Irish places up for grad in 2 weeks. That is, I'm sure you've experienced this in your own playing days, that is an extra thing for a lot of players to deal with. They will be conscious of coaches in the crowd.
Yeah, I think very much so. I from my own experience, I remember about 20-ish years ago, playing an under-21 World Cup, where the Irish management travelled all the way down to Argentina to watch us. We were kind of, there was a lot of up-and-coming players in around that squad. Leo Cullen was on that team, Dunnock O'Callaghan, Paul O'Connell. And actually, I was one of three out-halves, myself, Paddy Wallace and Jeremy Staunton. And our coach at the time, Brian McLaughlin, was leaning towards including all three of us in the back line, regardless of position. He felt we were worth a shot, so he'd often put a square peg in a round hole, and I was one of those. I was selected in a quarter final, I think, to play against New Zealand, and had the unenviable task of marking Doug Howlett. But I do remember, for a start, I had never played a competitive match on the wing, and secondly, Warren Gatland had taken up position on the sideline right beside Brian McLaughlin. So I remember marking Doug Howlett, and he left me grasping thin air maybe on three or four occasions, but one in particular where he went inside me and then outside, and I was left chewing the dust. And I remember looking up and seeing a pair of boots on the sideline and praying they weren't Gatland's feet. And as I looked up, I could just see him nodding at me. So it did actually play on my mind significantly for the remainder of that game. I think having Irish management very, very keenly looking at this Munster-Leinster game on Saturday, I think doubtless it will weigh heavy on the players' minds. I do think, given the lack of regular rugby, the irregularity of this season overall, that a full-strength Leinster-Munster tie this weekend is actually as close as we've come in the professional era to a final trial. And there's always scope for form selections coming into the Six Nations. And I think the players will be carrying nerves. I think they're slightly rusty in terms of game practice. And with that, you develop a sense of, a sense of fear again about around performance. So, yeah, I think there'll be quite a few nerves this week.
And did Warren Gatland lean down and say, Andy, your life just took a turn for the worse, my friend?
Well, I can say his facial expression said those things for sure. He didn't actually speak to me. But yeah, it's something that's kind of burnt into my brain 21 years later. So
Yes, I'm sure. Square pegs in round holes is all that more difficult in a sport like rugby. For instance, yesterday, Paul Pogba played on the right wing for Manchester United. Not a position he ever wants to play. And yet you can kind of get by at times a bit more in football. Far more difficult for you to be pitched out against Dougie Howlett.
Yeah, well, I suppose in fairness at that stage, I would have been one of the faster players on the team. That was a strength of mine. I think where my weaknesses lay as an out half at that stage was probably the strategic side of the game. So there was a fair argument on McLaughlin's part that I could hold my own on the wing, but okay. he got it wrong.
Okay. Paddy Wallace, Jeremy Staunton said, best of luck, pal.
Exactly, yeah.
So Ireland go into the Six Nations then on the back of this Leinster-Munster match, which will be interesting to say the least. On the back themselves of a weird autumn. You can forget now, they beat Wales early on in that Autumn Nations Cup, Wales in crisis. And then there was Twickenham, England 18, Ireland 7, and it never felt like Ireland were going to win that game. And then they were so bad against Georgia at the Aviva Stadium. There was a lot of pressure on this coaching ticket going into the Scotland game. You know, it's like, geez, if they lose this, it's really good. You know, knives are out for Farrell territory almost. They did win that match. Since then, Paul O'Connell has joined the coaching ticket, which I think has, you know, added a degree of enthusiasm to the whole thing. So that is where we are as we head towards an opening 7-8 days of Wales away and then France at home. That's the picture as things stand. You want to talk, I asked you, is there anything on your mind pre-show? And you wanted to talk about the Irish number nines, our tradition of scrum half play, how we develop, how we target certain players, and I mean, you're kind of pinpointing it as one of the key issues for Ireland's poor tempo, for thinking of Ireland in the last year, 18 months, 2 years, maybe, I guess, at this stage. Some fairly stodgy build-up play without much tempo would jump to a lot of people's minds. So where do you want to take us here?
Yeah, well, I think it's something that's the tempo of our game, the fundamental setter of the pace within a lot of rugby teams, international teams, domestic, European, Southern Hemisphere teams. The person who sets the pace in those environments tends to be the nine. And actually what I think has happened in Irish rugby over an extended period of time is there's a hierarchy on the field in terms of who sets the tempo and the strategy around our game. And I think traditionally we've had our tens do that. I suppose if we look at this Six Nations upcoming, we're playing against Wales and then France. And I think traditionally, if you look at the for example, the Welsh number nine production line in the last, God knows, 40 to 50 years, you go back as far as Chico Hopkins, who was the first kind of really celebrated Welsh number nine, actually went into rugby league, became a bit of an outcast because he made that choice to go into professional rugby league when rugby, the amateur ethos around rugby was so big around rugby union. He became a bit of an outcast, but was quite influential as a nine. Then you go into Gareth Edwards, maybe arguably the Pelé or Maradona of rugby history, one of the greatest nines ever, followed by Terry Holmes, followed by, who was a British Lion, followed by Robert Jones in the 80s. You then had Rob Howley in the 90s, Mike Phillips, Dwayne Peel, and now right through to the likes of Rhys Webb. Then you look at the French and you think of players like Philippe Carbonneau, Fabien Galthié has now gone on to be their head coach. They have these lovely utility 9/10 players in Elisalde, Michalak, they've had Mignoni, they've had Yashvili. They've both got a really consistent production line of nines who are quite dominant in their game and who are very much people within their playing group who set the tempo and the tone of play. And I actually don't think that emphasis has been in Irish rugby for a long time. We've obviously had, go back to the 70s, we've had like the likes of John Robbie, who was a British Lion, Michael Bradley in the 80s. And then in the last 20 years, obviously the standouts are Stringer, Owen Redden and Conor Murray. And of all those names, ironically, I think the one who gets probably the least credit is Owen Redden, who was a brilliant strategist, a brilliantly domineering player on the field. And I think it's something that's potentially in Conor Murray's game, or was in Conor Murray's game. And I think for a myriad reasons, it's slightly left him. I mean, when we think back of the game in Chicago where we beat the All Blacks, he was a huge running threat. His passing game was excellent. He used the box kick judiciously. He didn't overuse it. And there was variation in the game. And perhaps through the change or the shift in coaching strategy that happened in the following years, he's kind of fallen foul to a lot of criticism for overuse of that. And I'm sure he has to take ownership of that as well. But overall, I think there's been a lack of emphasis on our nines running the tempo of our game. And when we look at how stale our attacking game has been in the last couple of years, we haven't been dynamic at nine, and we've overused that box kick. If we're looking at, you mentioned Paul Pogba, if we're looking at other sporting comparisons, I think the way the Dubs use Kieran Kilkenny currently is to slow play down to maintain possession. But I think, without oversimplifying it, I mean, that's a 140 metre pitch. It's a much bigger pitch, same amount of players. And having someone like Kilkenny who slows play down is quite advantageous to Dublin. I mean, he can obviously move in any direction, pass in any direction. I think in modern rugby, with huge players on a smaller pitch, the notion of slowing play down to maintain possession is not advantageous. And it's become this malaise that we've fallen into. And the only alternatives, the only get-outs then are pop to a forward runner, blunt force trauma, which doesn't work against bigger oppositions. And then when it becomes stale, we kick it away. So I'd love to see in this Six Nations a shift in that emphasis. We've seen Farrell make selections, bold selections around the likes of Jamieson Gibson-Park. And again, I don't want to gloss over Luke McGrath. They're both very, very similar high-tempo players. Murray can play that high-tempo game if he's prompted. And then you've obviously got the likes of Cooney, Marmion, Caelan Blade. There's a lot of talent, and there's a lot of capacity to do that in our nines. I think it could really change the overall focus of our attack.
Because through Kieran Kilkenny, Dublin, by slowing it down at times, are exerting total control on the game. They can slow it down to literally walking pace and then spring an attack, and they're adept at doing that. So you're saying it's not possible in rugby, or not a good idea in rugby. When you talk about that staleness in attack, and accepting a lot of criticism has gone Conor Murray's way, for instance, I would have thought like the primary reason for that, as opposed to the tempo not being injected by a number nine, is down to Ireland struggling at the breakdown in the last 2 years.
I think it's a fair point. I mean, we can't isolate one from the other. They're mutually beneficial. A fast breakdown should lend itself to a more dynamic use of the ball at nine. But I think similarly in reverse, we've got to look at a faster use of ball at nine means defences have less time to get organised, means it's more likely that a nine will be able to find space in between the shoulders of defenders for an oncoming attacker, which again will lend itself to more momentum at the next ruck. So I don't think one can look highly functional without the other, but I do think there has been a real problem and perhaps a misled approach that sense of seeing forwards line up one behind another to lengthen the distance from the breakdown so our nine can put his foot on the ball, you know, look over everyone's shoulder, pick out who he's going to box kick. And it has become terribly cumbersome and predictable. And that type of play that we used, I suppose, the Kieran Kilkenny analogy, it's counterproductive in modern rugby as opposed to what's happening in that Kieran Kilkenny setting. It's actually been very advantageous to Dublin to cool the jets, slow things down, and then launch a very aggressive, fast attack. Modern rugby is not lending itself to that. The game needs kind of almost constant high tempo and an ability to make decisions at high tempo under pressure. The idea of slowing it down is really counterproductive. So I think that was one of the key reasons Farrell opted for Gibson Park in a couple of those autumn games. And I think it showed bravery and courage on his part that he needs to change the tempo of how we play. He needs to find a way for our attack to be unleashed.
Mm. The wider cultural point you made was very interesting about what is an Irish number nine and what is their role in the team. And you've gone back a long way there. But even if I was to think of my lifetime properly watching rugby, or rugby, say, in the professional era, you've got Ronan O'Gara and you've got Johnny Sexton. They are not just two dominant players. They're two dominant personalities. There is no doubt who's running the team.
Absolutely. And I think I don't know if it's uniquely Irish. It's certainly more Northern Hemisphere in terms of how rugby is run on the field. There's always been great value attached to a 10 that appears to be the on-field general. Maybe the only Southern Hemisphere examples I can think of that are the same would be the likes going back to the 80s and 90s, Michael Lynagh, obviously a double World Cup winner, but he had Nick Farr-Jones inside him, who was actually team captain. So if we jump then to the likes of the All Blacks, where when Beauden Barrett gets World Player of the Year two seasons in a row, what is their response? They ditch him out to fullback and they bring in Richie Mwonga. So there's no actual reliance on his on-field generalship, if that's a word, but what has actually happened, I think they've diluted responsibility and decision-making across the back line, but also tend to focus a lot on Aaron Smith again for tempo. And absolutely, we can identify that. I think historically, we can identify that in the Welsh and French approaches. And less so we see it in 10. So yeah, we've certainly, Sexton at his best and O'Gara at their best have been hugely influential and positive influences in Irish rugby. But I think it does leave us a little short in terms of, again, I mentioned Redden. I think Redden is probably the least celebrated of the modern era scrum halves in terms of, he would have very much fit that Welsh-French role in terms of how he ran a game, how he linked in with forward play, how he ran overall decision making. And I think we've moved away from that slightly, the nine being more of a conduit to the 10, as opposed to being two big, bold personalities that run it together.
Mm. Yeah, that's very interesting, because actually a couple of moments ago, when you were about to say who you thought was maybe a forgotten scrum half in some way, I thought you were going to say Peter Stringer. Not that Stringer's forgotten, but like, probably the less nuanced view of rugby that I have, I think, well, Stringer, quick pass, that's tempo. So you're talking about a bit more than that with Redden.
Yeah, well, I think Stringer was, he had so many good traits. His durability was one. He was built of rubber. You know, he never really got injured. He had an amazing injury profile, which meant he was available. His fitness levels were arguably better than anyone in the squad. His pass, much celebrated pass, was as you identified, high tempo. But if I was to look at his all-round game, I don't think he was as much of a running threat as some other nines have been. And similarly, at that stage in his career, box kicking was underutilized as a general strategy. So Redden had leadership influence in terms of key decisions. Redden would have worked closely when he was Irish scrum half with O'Connell. For example, Redden may well and regularly did change line-out calls, influence how he was going to receive the ball, therefore how the back line were going to receive the ball, as opposed to being passive and accepting what Paul O'Connell gave him. Mm. And it's that level of involvement in the overall strategy and outcomes on the field that I think I'd like to see a shift towards, which is not to diminish the responsibilities on the likes of Sexton or whoever plays at 10,
yeah,
but it's to share that responsibility and take ownership that not one person, and not particularly our 10, becomes responsible for the overall tempo. And certainly our nines have been responsible for slowing everything down as opposed to speeding things up. So yeah, I think Redden of all the scrum halves in the last 20 years were probably the closest to that Welsh French prototype that I'm referring to.
This is quite interesting, because when I have conversations with various people across the years increasingly, and we're talking about, say, you know, the reliance on Sexton, one of the obvious solutions which is put forward is, well, let's get another first receiver in at centre. We actually, even as a punditry culture, don't talk too much about injection of tempo from nine and ownership of the game plan from nine, albeit Murray has taken criticism in the last 2 years, but not that type of criticism, I think.
Yeah, I think his... the criticism has probably been leveled towards, you know, overuse of the box kick. And again, we don't know exactly to what degree that's his on-field decision or how much he's been prompted by a coaching diktat. But some of the names I mentioned there, even in terms of their personality within the game, you know, the French and the Welsh, the likes of Fabien Galthié, Pierre Mignoni, you know, you're looking now at Antoine Dupont with a backup of Baptiste Serran. It's very, very clear that they are the little generals on the field. And it's just that shift in ownership. I would like to see that the Nines empowered with more responsibility, because I think they are in that position where they're central to how we dictate the speed levels within our game. And we're looking at that sometimes as an afterthought. And then the reliance shifts out to a 10 or second receiver to then put pace on the ball. But I think at that stage, it's slightly too late. It's 10, 15 yards too wider in the channel. But with organized defenses, it again becomes this blunt force trauma. And we return to that 1 yard gain type rugby, which can be exhausting and boring and difficult to watch.
It's exhausting to watch as well, yeah. As you're talking there, if I was to think of, do we have a quintessential Le Petit General in Irish rugby, the name that jumps to mind is John Cooney. All action, hell, he'll take the kicks as well. He owns the game plan, he's deciding things, he's making decisions, he's about tempo and running rugby. Is he more of the ilk of what you're talking about?
He is, yeah. I think Luke McGrath as well has had a tough year. Obviously, you know, very much 50-50 in terms of selection with Leinster, but then leapfrogged by Gibson Park. But also, I think that was a good decision too, because I think Gibson Park is quite dominant in terms of how he sets the overall pace for the team. And I think it's well noted, both McGrath, Gibson Park, and so too Cooney are very good communicators between the forward pack and the back line. I think they demonstrate a lot of confidence and leadership. And I see one thing in McGrath's game to highlight is how often he gets a second touch in attack. His backup and support play, very reminiscent of a young Sean Edwards when he played in that position for Wigan. Always scoring, you know, prolific try scorer at nine by just following up play, getting a second touch and being a link player after he's been a distributor at the breakdown. So, yeah, I think we do have that Le Petit General, we do have that profile within the provincial setup. And I wonder, is there pressure on Murray to recover that type of pace into his game, or is the alternative just a different selection to one of the players we've mentioned?
Yeah, because Murray has been talked about as good as any scrum half in the world for a time. So I presume he has it in his locker to play that tempo game.
Well, he does. I mean, he has done it before. I mean, he was a real threat in around that kind of 2015, 16, 17 period. Now, that's obviously 4 years ago. And as players get older, I can certainly attest to this in my own career, you do lose a yard of pace, which is tricky at nine, tricky at ten.
Very serious injury as well. You suspect that may have limited his enthusiasm for taking the ball and running in places.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other part is that he became, in a sense, a victim of his own success. He became a very much a marked man. Mm. I mean, a superb series for the Lions down in Australia I think was way back then, probably 2013. He became very much a marked man, which is clearly makes his life more difficult. But I think he's possibly withdrawn too much in terms of his threat around the ruck. But what I think, you know, it's very hard to suddenly turn it back on. I think a simpler way to allow yourself to be a running threat is to constantly clear the ball with high tempo, which tends to fracture that defensive line in or around the ruck. The less time they have to get organized later on in the game as those players tire, you may get that half yard, but it's not likely to happen when the ball stays at the base of the ruck for 10, 15, 20 seconds, which gives everyone that breather. You know, so I do think Murray has it in his locker to regain that running threat. And obviously we can see in the profile of players across the provinces there, the ones we've mentioned, they certainly have that right now to a greater degree in terms of that running threat.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking of when Anthony Daly was sitting down with Joe Schmidt, and Schmidt was evaluating Anthony Daly's, you know, pre-match routine and what do you do here and what do you do there. And on the bus, Anthony Daly was saying he reiterates the, you know, 10 key points for today. I think it was 10. I don't want to do Anthony a disservice. It was either 10 or 5, but I think it was 10 key points for today on the bus. And Schmidt may have said something along the lines of, and do you use a list for that? And Anthony Daly may have said, yeah. I feel like I'm doing Anthony Daly a terrible disservice here, but it was a story he told. And Schmidt made the point, I mean, would you remember those 10 things yourself without the list? So if you're emphasising everything, you're emphasising nothing. It does feel, listening to you, like Ireland could really do with emphasising tempo. You know, there's only 2-3 things a player can go out and really focus on. Listening to you and the way you've described our attack so perfectly, and I can see it as you're describing it, it sounds like, geez, we could really do with that injection of tempo above a lot of things right now.
Yeah, I think so. I think it can be a simplification because we are reliant on very good set-piece possession. And sure, one would assume with John Fogarty, hugely experienced scrum coach, and now the arrival of Paul O'Connell, which has been greeted, I think, correctly with great excitement, that the lineup will restore to a greater level where it's been than it's been recently. I think the strong likelihood is we will have an improved set piece. I think we will have an improved all-round, more dynamic forward game. As a result.
So better work at the breakdown, you mean?
Yeah, I think generally improved first phase possession is going to lead to improved breakdown performance because you're on that front foot immediately and you've an awareness of where the next breakdown is going to be, and it provided all the variables fall into place, such as, you know, the channel that the 8 manages the ball from is the channel he wants. The 9 is then in a better position to launch the attack with 10. One would assume, I think, we're going to have an improved set piece. So therefore, yes, I would agree with you that with the Anthony Daly and Joe Schmidt analogy, if we were to look at clearing the whiteboard and have players go out unencumbered and say, okay, you've got one thing to work on. My view would be if we raise the tempo of our game, and the greatest route to that is through how our 9 plays, I think the overall performance could vastly improve. And again, I suppose we could look at an example like Japan, where they do. We're looking, say, Ireland v England, the last 4 times we've played them, slow tempo, a lot of possession, and we may as well have still been playing them 3 hours later and not look likely to score. Mm. Now, if you compare that with the likes of Japan's approach in the World Cup, where they're giving a weight advantage and height advantage to a lot of opposition, but their distribution, their speed with which they move the ball away from the breakdown on a constant level, and their fitness levels, the dynamism that came into their game, that made them a hugely difficult prospect for any defense in the World Cup, and we obviously fell of that too. And I think it's it's a worthwhile approach. It's actually something we ought to look at more regularly, in that we need desperately to bring a dynamic aspect back to our game. I don't believe we're going to outmuscle the top sides, no matter how much weight training we do, no matter how much fitness work we do, no matter how good Paulie's interventions are in the lineout and John Fogarty in the scrum. I still feel we're going to lose we'll only gain parity with that physical battle. But you can take on teams with speed, usage of skill and momentum, I think, to a far greater positive effect.
Mm. As a number 10 in your own playing days, did you like a number 9 who took ownership, who put tempo on the thing, who got involved and dictated things a bit? Or were you there, standing there with your arms crossed saying, that's my job?
Absolutely not. I mean, I loved it. The idea that a 9 took pressure off the 10 by being a running threat was a delight. It took pressure. I mean, currently you're looking at a situation, I think, where Sexton has been the fulcrum of our attack, and as a result, all eyes are on him in defence. You stop Sexton, you disarm Sexton, you try and get in his face, you try and upset his mood, and anything and everything that's done and is possible within the laws of the game to disrupt his flow. And that is an approach that has been adopted by teams to some degree of success. If you double the challenge and both your 9 and 10 are a real threat and are using a lot of variation in their game, just by that rationale alone, you dilute the attention and the focus in the opposition defence. They can't raise their game enough to focus on both people with equal detail. So, yeah, I mean, when your 9 is, if you think of Aaron Smith, how central he is to the overall speed of the All Blacks game, it's no wonder that Beauden Barrett had more space, you know, in those 2 years when he was World Player of the Year.
Well, when we're previewing the French game in a couple of weeks, we'll be talking about DuPont every bit as much as Intermac. You know, and DuPont will scare the hell out of us probably even more than Intermac. So that, you know, that double threat is there perfectly encapsulated with those two. Obviously, look, they've so much talent to pick from. And the Sexton point, it works twofold, because one, defensive coaches are pretty much on the record as saying our approach to Ireland the last couple of years is if we stop Sexton, we stop Ireland. So that's an issue. And secondly, he's now going on 36 and is not going to play 80 minutes of every game. That's for sure. So who's next man in at the moment for you?
At 10?
Yeah.
I would probably, right on form, go with Jack Carty. I think he got... I do feel for him in that I think he really took a lot of heat after that Japanese loss in the World Cup. And people have short memories in terms of, you know, he actually created 2 of the tries in the first half. He didn't marshal the team in the second half. But again, I suppose that's central to my overall point is, did he need to marshal the team as a younger 10 coming in? Or did we have historically, are we shooting ourselves in the foot by expecting every single 10 to be like Rog and to be like Johnny Sexton? Mm. They are outliers. They're, you know, the vast majority of 10s are not as domineering as those people. And we need to understand that we can play a successful game without this hierarchical structure that always runs through 10. And so the likes of Carty should be able to arrive into an Irish squad setup with slightly diluted responsibility levels, much like Richie Mwonga has done in the All Blacks setup. And I think Carty has shown a lot of resilience in the fact he went from the heights of being selected in World Cup to the depths of losing his base in Connacht. And then again, he's shown a bit of hustle, shown a bit of fight to get back in there and recover his position in Connacht, get some regular game time, get some consistency. But one thing I think Carty has is a huge amount of natural skill. Mm. And he's also got creativity in his game that very, very few 10s have. I think he'd be a really good backup at the moment, secondary to Sexton. And I think failing that, the forgotten man of Irish rugby due to injury, Joey Carberry, if we could get some consistency and fitness and availability back in with Joey, it would be like a huge addition to Irish rugby again. I still think if he can return to the fitness levels he had, he's a massive prospect.
Yeah, I'm even as you were talking there thinking the way England have taken on Farrell, their marquee player in many ways, and put him to 12, I'm not so sure we would be as quick to do that, listening to you talk about our cultural approach to 10 and right back to Campbell and Ward. You know, 10 is almost the most debated, talked about position. But your point about Rog and Sexton being, you know, I can't say one off, given that there's two of them, but pretty close to one offs. There's just not going to be a conveyor belt of that type of 10 coming through. So maybe we do need to think more about our attitude to the number nine position, which leads me to finish up by asking you the question obviously you knew would have to be asked. So Conor Murray is generally been back in form, is what people are saying. Who's your number nine for the Six Nations in your world?
John Cooney.
Okay. For all the reasons we talked about.
Yeah. I think he's the one, and he's no spring chicken. He's been around the block. For me, he's the one who can provide the most all-round approach to rugby that I think we require in order to change our overall tempo of attack. Do I think Murray is capable of it? I'm not sure anymore. I think he is, but I'm just not sure in terms of the overall pace. Is that pace in his game in terms of simply, I think, his age and his the amount of time he's been around? Is he going to be a threat? Is he going to be a reduction, reduce his box kicking game, which has become very much overused. His passing game is certainly spot on. But if I was to make a call, I would go with John Cooney and then a backup potentially of Murray and then or one from Gibson Park or Luke McGrath at the moment.
Listen, always good to chat to Free Thinking, Andy Dunn. Thanks so much. Stay safe.
Thanks, Emil, Joe. Take care.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.